Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this Wednesday, eve of Thanksgiving. And I'm looking forward to hearing what's planned there in the Arms household in London, England, where we find him this afternoon. And with that, Tom, good afternoon to you. And tell us something about the weather before we get into a few other questions associated to Thanksgiving Eve. What's the weather like?
Truly miserable. Absolutely miserable. Wet, cold, damp, damp, wet, cold, gray. Has that cheered you up?
Sounds, yes, very cheering. What's Thanksgiving going to be like?
Well, you know, the British don't celebrate Thanksgiving as such. I mean, the Arms household, we had our Thanksgiving 2 weeks ago. It's a movable calendar for us to try and fit in with other people. And we invited 24 people for dinner, and I get to give a speech, and they get to get mm-hmm. bored.
Oh, well.
It was very interesting. We have, a few years ago, we started Black Friday.
That was the question I was going to ask. But before I get to Black Friday, I'm just curious, for the Thanksgiving feast, do you serve turkey, roast? What's the
and well, by the way, we serve turkey.
Okay, and
I mean, you know, this is American household, so we have turkey and pumpkin pie and cranberry sauce.
Okay.
Eileen makes sweet potato casserole. We throw in a few British things like Brussels sprouts, mm-hmm. shredded Brussels sprouts and walnuts, which actually tastes quite nice. Pecan pie. It's pretty much an American feast with French wines.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I will say that we missed the feed. I'm sure that our reservation was lost in the mail. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Viewpoints around the world. Tom, you touched on something I want to ask you about, and it has to do with the shopping frenzy, Black Friday. And is this seen as a retail event? If so, what is the kickoff? Since, as you just pointed out a moment ago, the Brits don't really.
The kickoff was this past Friday. The Friday before Black Friday is the start of Black Friday.
Really?
But it varies from retail outlet to retail outlet. Now, what's very interesting is they just had a story in the national press here saying that it's all a con. That, in fact, only 1 in 20 they did. This was based on last year's sale prices. That only 1 in 20 of the stores that they surveyed actually lowered their prices on Black Friday.
Hmm. Okay. And by the way, there are a lot of people that would sort of address that issue even here, that it's designed to create a frenzy. But they do have what are a lot of things called lost leaders. That is, a few items that they basically give away below or sell below cost, but then everything else is at normal cost or maybe even higher. But that's one of the great concerns associated with Black Friday. That being said, what about the issue of debt, retail debt? There's been some concern here recently that folks are still recovering from last year's Black Friday. And I'm wondering, is there a lot of, shall we say?
Yeah, retail debt is a huge concern right across Europe.
Okay.
I think it's a huge concern right across the West, if not the world, that, you know, credit card debt is the single biggest source of debt, in the world these days. You know, it's not so much mortgages or anything like that. It is debt on your credit card, which of course is, very high interest rates.
Right. Right.
The other problem, of course, is the closure of retail units.
Mm-hmm.
That you're having a real problem with the high street shops, the retail units not being able to compete against the online services such as Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got massive closures of brand name stores, huge stores
right.
that are suffering badly. The same in the States, I think. The Sears Roebuck?
Sears. Sears.
Did it go under or was it saved?
Well, it's in a variety of, it's in bankruptcy. Sears, Kmart, J.C. Penney, or as a friend of mine likes to call it, Jacques Penney. And I saw an article recently, as a matter of fact, early this morning, that a famous retailer, Neiman Marcus, is even threatened as a result of the changing buying habits and shopping habits out there. So, yeah,
There's a famous store in Edinburgh called Jenner's in Princess Street, and that has just shut down this week.
Wow. This is it's a new market out there. And earlier today, I was chatting with someone who's promoting Small Business Saturday. As a matter of fact, promoting the fact that we should be shopping at our local stores, our small businesses, rather than the big box stores, or for that matter, even online, because of course Monday is Cyber Monday. And by the way, real quickly, is Cyber Monday a designated day there in the UK and in Europe by any chance?
No, I don't. Don't recall hearing that one.
Good. Good. Well, more power to your communities if you can avoid that. That's a personal opinion on that one. Since we are talking about money, let's talk about one item that you've noted on our list today. Bloomberg enters the lists of course, the candidates seeking the presidential nomination for the Democrat nomination. The battle of the billionaires and money in European elections as well. And I'm curious. Let's talk.
Yeah. Now, I thought this was interesting because, you know, it's often said, and it's one of these truisms, that to run for national political office, or even to run for state office quite often in America, you have to be two things. One, unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
And two, a millionaire.
Right.
And it seems somehow that those two should be a contradiction. You know, you need the time because the election process is much longer than it is in Europe.
Right.
And you need the money to spend on advertising, because that is, you know, money talks.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Whereas here, in this country, most of the, or a lot of the money that's spent on political campaigns comes through national headquarters.
Okay.
So it's not so much spent by individual candidates for individual candidates. And the individual candidates don't have to raise so much of the money themselves, although they do. Most of the money is channeled through the national headquarters, and the national headquarters raises the money from businesses or personal donors, and then assesses which candidates are more likely to be elected and allocates the money accordingly.
Tom,
that's number one. The next thing is that there are restrictions, much more restrictive on how much money you can spend and what you can spend it on, and how you can spend it, and so forth.
So now, Tom, the other question, of course, has to do with how this is being perceived there in the UK and the European community in light of the fact that, yes, of course, the president himself, very successful businessman, billionaire, 100 millionaire, whatever the title might be. And of course, Bloomberg, now also considered one of the richest men in the country and one of the richest in the world. What is the opinion about that kind of candidate there in the European community?
Well, it limits the type of person you can have for president.
Okay.
You know, you have to be wealthy and you have to be unemployed. And so it means that a person who isn't a billionaire or a millionaire or a multimillionaire, cannot run for office.
Right.
Or will be indebted to people who are giving him the money to run for office.
Well,
because of the cost of running for office.
Right. And of course, as you said a moment ago, and I think this is a particularly significant issue, even at the local level, state level. I was talking with a state senator who has been spending an inordinate amount of time in the chambers, and they don't get highly compensated for their services for the state. And so it's really a challenge for anyone who's basically earning a living and having to show up for work on a regular basis. We're going to get to more
elections.
Go ahead.
Yeah, when I was a local reporter in McLean, Virginia, many, many years ago, back in the early 70s, and they had elections to the State Education Board.
Uh-huh.
And I know that one candidate, personally knew one candidate, who spent $25,000 to be elected
for the
to
board.
A post which paid $8,000.
Yes, and we have to wonder. We shake our heads at that. We have to wonder about that.
That was in the 70s. I have no idea what it would be now.
Oh, my goodness. All right, well, Tom Arms with us this afternoon here on Viewpoints Around the World. We're going to get to other elections, and we'll, of course, get to topics associated with the U.S. political scene, but other issues around the world as well. And we'll be wrapping it up this afternoon with a topic which I find interesting, Poobricks. That's right, you heard it, Poobricks in the Philippines. We'll hear more about that in just a moment here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And yes, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule, since he's some 5 hours ahead of us. Tom, we were just chatting a few moments ago about elections, and I would like to touch on a few elections here that we've got in our list, and then we'll get into other items. Hong Kong elections, that's a big issue, and I'm just wondering, how is that being perceived there? What's the concerns in light of the fact that China, of course, has, and that is mainland China, has great heartache with the Hong Kong residents?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. Carrie Lam, who's the chief executive for Hong Kong, has said that she'll be happy to talk to the protesters, especially after they swept the board in these elections.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing she can do, is basically what she said. I'll talk to you, but, you know, it's not really up to me. It's up to Xi Jinping in Beijing. And so, you know, what's the point in talking to her? The question is, you know, and it's been the question for some months now, what is Beijing going to do about the Hong Kong protesters, right, and why? And it's getting down to a binary choice, well, possibly a three-way choice, either crack down, give in and devolve government, or alternatively, just carry on, try to contain it, mm-hmm, in the hopes that it will eventually fizzle out.
Right.
And that appears to be, the third option appears to be what most Sinologists think that Xi Jinping is trying to do. The problem arises that how long will the other members of the Politburo allow this to be contained? How long will they allow it to continue before they get fed up and want some changes at the top to go either towards the devolution end or to the crackdown end?
We don't, the other.
And there are no signs as yet of a struggle within the Politburo over this, but a lot of people are saying that it could come and will come if this continues.
You know,
in Hong Kong.
The other aspect of
because it will spread to other parts of China.
Right. Well, the other aspect of this, and one that we touched on actually just a few moments ago, is that of economy. And in fact, Hong Kong is a major player in the economy and the economic skids, if you will, of China, the ability to transition from a communist country into a capitalist world. It strikes me that China's going to have to be very cautious, because Hong Kong is a pivotal part of the Chinese economy.
That's because, you know, the people in Shanghai,
right,
would like that trade to be shifted to them,
mm-hmm,
or the people in Shenzhen or one of the other big, large Chinese cities. But they operate under Chinese Communist Party law, which works to the benefit of the party, whereas Hong Kong works under basic international free trade,
right,
British created law, which works to the benefit of the companies. So which area would you prefer to be working in? Which law would you prefer to be working under if you were a company trading with China? Hong Kong.
Well, absolutely. Well, let's move to another item associated with China and trade. And let's go to Australia. You've got a note here. Australia's probing alleged Chinese spy plot.
Yeah. Now this one's this is a real James Bond thing.
Hmm.
Because the person who was allegedly recruited, or they attempted to recruit, has been found dead in mysterious circumstances. And he's a Chinese Australian called Bo Zhao. And the allegation is that a Chinese spy ring approached him and offered him something like $680,000.
Wow.
To run for parliament and be a Chinese plant in the Australian parliament. He was 32 years old, and has turned up dead in a hotel room. And this was all splashed by Channel 9 in Australia. And the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, has promised an inquiry. You'll be surprised to hear that the Chinese deny it.
Oh, really? But my question is, what would the Chinese get out of this? And what is the value of all of this, and this growing connectivity around the world? One has to wonder, what did the Chinese hope to, if they were, in fact, this is alleged, mind you, what would they gain out of this?
Well, you know, if you're a member of parliament, you have access to information, you have access to people, this person, Bozhao, would have been able to pass that on and to plant seeds of doubt and everything else in China, in the Australian government. The Australians have a strange, sort of paranoid schizophrenic relationship with China.
Mm-hmm.
They're absolutely terrified of being taken over politically by China. But they are wholly dependent upon the Chinese economy for the growth in their own economy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a love-hate relationship almost.
Okay, this segues probably into another conversation here, now bringing it back to Germany and the United States, and that's related to, I always want to say Huawei or Huawei? How do you pronounce the name of the...
Huawei.
Huawei, thank you. And, of course, Huawei is a Chinese government-supported cell phone technology
telecom
company. Yeah, telecom company. Germany and the United States and the U.S., of course, I read just recently, has informed all of the government agencies to tear out the Huawei devices. I was impressed. Tear them out. Don't just simply, stop buying them, but tear them out. What is this related to this concern that China has versus governments such as its interest in Australia?
Yes. Yes, of course it does. And there's great concern that data being fed mm-hmm. or data being used by Huawei
mm-hmm.
to be communicated by Huawei is simply then being channeled straight into Chinese government intelligence services, a bit like National Security Agency or mm-hmm. something like that. And that Huawei is not exactly a front, but a channel for data and information. And it really comes down to, the Germans are saying, it's a bit deeper than simply Huawei and the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
The Germans are objecting more than anything else to being told what to do. They don't like being told what to do by the Americans.
Okay.
They particularly don't like the ambassador, Richard Grenell, who has a history of this. In fact, within hours, literally, I think it was 2 hours of turning up in Berlin, he issued a statement, just after being appointed to say, all European companies must, as of this moment, stop trading with Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. This is a directive from the Trump administration, which I am issuing. Well, that didn't go over very well because there was no consultation. It was just a directive. And then he turned around a bit after that and said, a big part of my job as ambassador to Germany is to support the far right parties in Europe. Well, that also didn't go over very well, because you're not supposed to, as an ambassador or as a diplomat, meddle in the domestic affairs of the countries to which you have been assigned.
Mm-hmm.
So, you've got to see the background behind this, this current discussion and disagreement. And there is growing disenchantment, not only with this ambassador, but with the attitude that the Trump administration can direct and can tell without consultation its allies exactly what to do and how to run their businesses and their governments.
All right. I understand that. We won't belabor this. We're going to get back to more on the issue of the American relationship and Europe in just a few moments. But I want to stay with this for one more moment on Huawei, pronouncing the business properly this time, and its relationship with the U.S. and with other countries as well. In light of the concerns in Hong Kong, is there not some, shall we say, skepticism about the relationship with these major corporations and Chinese-backed corporations and other governments? Is there no concern? What's the attitude there in the UK, for example?
Oh, yes. Yeah, certainly there's concern here in the UK, and it's been raised in Parliament here. We are, last I heard, they were going to be using part of the Huawei technology.
Okay.
Try to be selective in what they do use in order to avoid the transfer of sensitive data. The problem is that Huawei is way ahead mm-hmm. in the 5G technology, and the 5G technology is seen as crucial to the next generation of telecoms.
Right.
And it would take years for the competitors to catch up, by which time the Chinese could have overtaken that is, Chinese companies or the companies that take Huawei could have easily overtaken the Western companies that don't take Huawei for political reasons. So you've got to balance these very good business reasons against the very good political reasons.
All right, we're going to get back to that more in just a moment. As a matter of fact, coming up in a few minutes, we'll talk about the upcoming NATO summit here with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World here on the Talk Station.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We've been chatting about some items that, basically the U.S. has concerns about, and that, of course, Huawei being one of them, and the relationship of this telecom giant with other nations. That leads me to several discussions about the United States and its relations with Europe at this point, Tom. Normally we start this conversation earlier in the program, but there are so many things we've been talking about. I think they're pretty important. I would like to just start with, we'll start with the NATO summit next week. And what is the feeling related to the president's arrival, and what will be the discussion topics, do you think? And well, what's the attitude there in the European community?
I think there are lots of secondary topics, but right at the core of it is what's being referred to as American unilateralism. That is, that it is taking decisions, important decisions, which affect the entire alliance without consulting the alliance. Such as the treatment of the Kurds in Syria, or the decision to withdraw from the talks with the Taliban. Those are two particular incidents which immediately spring to mind. And the feeling of the Europeans is if you want our support, if you want to act, if you want us to be an effective alliance, you've got to consult with us and be prepared to compromise at times.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's not seen as, we're not seen as being willing to compromise. And of course.
In fact, I had one diplomat tell me, not only does he not consult or compromise with his allies, he doesn't consult or compromise with his own Pentagon.
And, of course, that leads to the next topic. And, of course, we're chatting in that case about President Trump. The resignation recently of the Secretary of the Navy, how was that covered, and how important is that?
That's very important because right at the core, you know, there's always core issues at these things which are quite often glossed over. You know, they're assumed, they're taken for granted, which I think is a big mistake. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's the rule of law, which the Navy Secretary alluded to. Now, whenever there's a wartime situation, you have what are called rules of engagement. Right. I know you're familiar with it because mm-hmm. you're in the military. And these rules of engagement are effectively the laws of war. And you have to abide by these laws of war. And if you don't, you break the law, you face the consequences, just like you would in civilian life.
Mm-hmm.
And Gallagher broke the rules of engagement. He was told by President Trump that he doesn't have to face the consequences.
Right. Well,
and that undermines the rule of law, rules of engagement, undermines rule of law, not only in a wartime situation, but also in a civilian situation.
Okay. So you, the European community has been paying attention to this, and it, as you just expressed, has raised some concerns. One other quick question for you, and I've got to ask this in relationship to the president, and we haven't really, done a great deal of in-depth coverage on this today, which I think is sufficient, frankly. And that, of course, is the impeachment hearings and the activities in Washington, D.C. How much coverage is that getting right now in the European community? And I have one other quick question associated with it. But first, how much coverage and how much of a discussion?
It's still getting a lot of – it's getting big coverage. I mean, the biggest thing was, I think this morning or yesterday, the invitation for the president to be – well, two things. One, the federal judge said that he is not entitled to executive immunity, and neither are his staff.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, of course, is that he was invited to be represented either himself or through counsel at hearings.
Okay.
So, and so those
– And it is being
– The third thing, of course, which I actually found it quite funny, I did – I laughed at his pardoning of bread and butter.
Oh,
I thought that was very amusing.
Okay, and of course we're talking about the turkey pardons. Did that get coverage?
It did, yes.
Oh my goodness. All right. The other question related to this, and of course we're chatting with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, and that of course is the continued discussion of impeachment. I'm wondering, we're seeing here in the U.S., and I won't belabor the time on this one, but we're seeing here in the U.S. a great deal of irritation, and I would even say weariness when it comes to the impeachment. As a matter of fact, we're even beginning to see polling numbers that indicate that the general populace is tired of it. I'm curious, is it still considered high dudgeon there in the European community, sort of like the soap opera of the day?
Yeah, it's still soap opera of the
okay.
day.
All
but,
right.
You know, I like to draw parallels between the impeachment
mm-hmm.
and Brexit.
Let's go there.
You know,
yeah.
Things can't go on. You know, it's the same sort of thing. People here are almost prepared to accept Brexit just to get people to shut up. I think there's the same sort of attitude towards impeachment in the States. Personally, I think that it's better to be right, whatever right is, and no matter how long it takes, but you've got to get it right. You know, that's because
okay.
the consequences of getting something like this completely wrong are just massive.
Well,
and so, you know, I'm personally quite prepared to put up with the debate on Brexit, and I'm quite enjoy listening to the debate on impeachment because I'm not,
you're not there.
Directly concerned.
Right. All right. Well, I want to go to the issue of the British elections and Brexit. You just alluded to a moment ago. What is what's the status of the election? The election is for the Prime Minister, and I use that description probably inaccurately, but the election's coming up here very shortly, in another week or so. Am I correct?
2 weeks.
Okay,
it's coming up in 2 weeks. Boris Johnson is ahead in the polls considerably. I think last point was 15 points ahead.
Hmm.
Jeremy Corbyn is slipping. We've got two big issues which have come up this week. Both involve racial stroke religious prejudice. The Labour Party for some time has been accused of institutional anti-Semitism. And you've had the chief rabbi in Britain come out and urge people not to vote Labour and declared that Jeremy Corbyn is unfit for high office. Never before, in my memory, has a religious leader said that.
Wow.
They keep out of politics.
Understood.
And the other thing is that as soon as they started talking about this, the Muslim Council said more or less the same thing about the Conservative Party and Boris Johnson. that he's not necessarily anti-Semitic, but he's Islamophobic.
Wow.
So you've got the Muslim Council telling the Muslims don't vote conservative. And you've got the Jewish Council and the chief rabbi saying don't vote Labour. On top of that, the Labour Party has come out and attacked the Indian government for its activities in Kashmir, with the result that the Hindus have said don't vote Labour.
Oh, okay. And the date for the election is when?
12th of December. Thursday.
12th of December. All right. I'm curious, has politics become a challenging conversation to be had at the dining room table by any chance there in the UK?
No, I think it depends on the dining room table you are. I mean, in our household, we're all of one particular political persuasion.
That's to be expected, yes. But
but in other households, yes, definitely. I'll be very interested to know. We're told that this is the most important election for generations. But going back to what we were saying earlier about how people are just so fed up, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a big drop in numbers voting.
That was the other question.
Fed up, even though this is a very important election.
That was the other question I was going to ask, is what were you expecting the turnout? And of course, it is stunning that you would have an election just before, and of course, we perceive this from the U.S. perspective here, this being Christmas season, which is politics is, it's just not considered of interest. I'm wondering, the December election, is the holiday
last
season?
The last time they had a December election was, I think, 1927. Mm-hmm. It was a flop. People did not go out and vote because it was wet and cold and just before Christmas.
Right.
And they generally, the feeling is it's a bad time of year, but it was forced upon Boris Johnson by the fact that Parliament would not agree his Brexit plans.
And of course, the next question related to Brexit, where are we? It's now just sort of a blob from my perspective.
It's in limbo.
It is in
limbo. It's in limbo awaiting the election result.
The European community, the European Union,
They're keeping out of it. They do not meddle in British domestic politics.
Okay.
As I said last week, unlike Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump.
Uh-huh. Right. Thank you.
And they're saying absolutely nothing. Okay. There are no talks, no discussions. They're waiting to see who is going to be the prime minister.
All right. Moving on to another issue of elections, and we'll get to that before we go to the break. Catalonian Independence Party likely to back Spanish socialist government. That's interesting. Of course, Spain has been a topic of ours in the past, Tom. What's happening there in the Spanish community?
Iberian Peninsula? Well, you just had an election, uh-huh, which resulted in the fourth hung parliament in 4 years.
Wow.
And part of the problem in this latest election is that the right-wing Vox Party came in a good third. And the Vox Party is very, very right-wing. It wants to crack down on the Catalonian independence movement, send in the police and the military and everything else, arrest anyone who demonstrates and so forth. And the Socialist Party has tried to reach an agreement and sort of steered a middle course between the hard line and a slightly softer line. Well, the Catalonians they're concerned that if they don't prop up the socialist government, they're going to end up with a government which includes Vox, and that's going to be even worse.
Okay.
And so they've entered into discussions with the socialists to try and prop them up. Whether or not they'll be successful remains to be seen.
All right, we'll go to a break on that one, but I'm just curious, is this perceived as a major issue for the European community and maybe the European Union?
Not for the European Union. Obviously, every country has different regions which would like to have a bit more independence and devolution. Okay. Britain has Scotland and Ireland and or Northern Ireland and Wales, and there are parts of Italy and so forth and so on. And those areas are watching what is happening in Catalonia, and if Catalonia can come to some sort of agreement with the central government in Madrid, it could be used as a template elsewhere in Europe, yes.
All right. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us, and we're coming up in just a moment. We're going to learn about poo bricks in the Philippines. Stay tuned for more here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, I know that we're going to talk about poo bricks in the Philippines. I want to hear about that. But before I do, I have a quick question for you, and I just saw on the news here this morning, so you may not be fully addressed to this, but I'm just curious. Apparently, the protests in Iran have become very violent. Is the European community watching what's going on there in the Iranian sector?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Of course they are. And they're very violent in Iraq as well.
Right.
You know, right across Iraq, Lebanon, Iran, we've got violent protests taking place. You know, they don't want instability. What tends to happen when you have instability is someone might get overthrown, you get a power vacuum. Mm-hmm. You don't know what's going to fill that power vacuum.
Is there
generally, whatever fills it is not good.
Right. Is there a possibility that there could be a coup in Iran? Is there even a glimmer of possibility of that?
Of course there's a possibility. I mean, the Shah was overthrown.
Oh, well, but
these countries can be subject to coups. I remember I was a diplomatic correspondent at the time when the Shah was overthrown, and we were getting cables read to us by American and British diplomats saying, oh, he'll never be overthrown. He's solid.
Well,
and of course he was.
Well, I'm just curious. It's just surprising. All right, let's move to the final conclusion of the day. Poo bricks in the Philippines. Okay, poo as in the droppings of animals or whatever.
Yep, not as in Winnie the Pooh.
Right, right. Tell us what are we talking about here?
In particular, dog poo.
Okay.
And there's a group of environmentalists scouring the streets of Manila, picking up tons and tons of dog poo, adding a bit of straw, and selling them as bricks.
Well,
they're making money.
I'm sort of stunned. I think that
smells a bit, doesn't it?
It does smell a little bit, but I'm thinking also this has been a age-old form of brick making, has it not?
Well, I don't think they've actually gone out onto the streets with a poo scooper and picked it up.
Well, hey, little entrepreneurship always sells. Oh, pardon me. As always, Tom, thank you very much for being with us. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And though you've already enjoyed a Thanksgiving feast, we here in the States wish you a happy Thanksgiving tomorrow.
And you too, Lockwood.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Thank you very much.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.